You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Guatemala and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and it is that time of the week again where we get to yarn all things science and technology with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston. Welcome back to the program, Ray.
Thanks for having me back, Sis.
Lovely to have you back on this Friday afternoon. Now, first up on our segment today, you're going to tell us about cooperation, grassroots action, and First Peoples knowledge will unlock Australia's blue economy. How does this work, Sis?
Yeah, so 85% of us on this continent live within 50 kilometres of the ocean. So that puts us inside what's called the blue ribbon. It's the interconnected waterways and coasts and seas that surround the land. And, you know, they provide us with recreation and cultural heritage to communities. But also they support existing major industries and newer ones like offshore energy. But there really is an urgent need to manage this blue ribbon, they call it, in a more sustainable way to build resilience to threats. So a 10-year strategy has been launched by Future Earth Australia. Now, that's a program from the Australian Academy of Science, and it's a plan to make sure that we have healthy coasts and oceans for an environmentally sustainable future. And it's been developed with really deep, good consultation across the country. And it outlines the steps that are needed to transform how we think about and govern and protect the oceans and coasts. And it's going to be like a blueprint for national change, they're saying, that our oceans and coasts will need. Now, one of the key recommendations in this strategy is that First Peoples knowledge and practices be elevated into all ocean and coastal management and to really empower Indigenous leadership in this space. And the report, it points to the example of how valuable connecting across knowledge systems can be with the successful land and sea management strategy for the Torres Strait that's been put in place. And you know, that brought together Western science and management experience and knowledge of the traditional owners to work out a vision and agree on the best pathways to achieve that vision. It's a proper grassroots collaboration. And you know, this is a really important decade that we're coming into where we're going to see the impacts of humans on our oceans and our coasts and the impacts of past mistakes in environmental management and what happens when you leave those First Nations voices out of the discussion. So our future really depends on the creation of a plan like this for our changing oceans and coasts so that we can protect them well into the future.
Such a good story to hear about on our science and technology segment today. Now to our next topic on our science and technology segment. And you're going to tell us that our love of takeaway food is actually littering our oceans, Sis.
Yeah, it is. Our love of takeaway. I do love some takeaway on a Friday night.
Yeah, same, right? Yeah.
But it's filling our oceans with rubbish. There's been research on worldwide litter inventories. So they go out and they take a look at exactly what it is that is polluting the ocean, and it showed that plastic items from takeaway food and drinks, they make up a huge amount of global ocean rubbish. And this study was carried out by Australian and international researchers, and it found that single-use bags, bottles, food containers and wrappers make up 44% of the total items across seven major aquatic environments.
Wow.
So that's a huge amount of rubbish. But the researchers say that while we're being told to focus on items like single-use straws and cotton buds and drink stirrers, their study shows that those items aren't the core problem. It's all those takeaway containers. That's really what's making up the bulk of it. You know, we've got a massive landmass, almost landmass you could call it, out in the ocean of rubbish that's the size of France. It's really unbelievable the amount of rubbish that we've got out in the oceans. So we need to be looking for more environmentally friendly ways to have our takeaway. So I reckon when you're down the fish and chip shop, just get them to wrap it up in a bit of paper instead of in a polystyrene or plastic container and start using those reusable bottles, I reckon.
Sounds good, sis, but not good news to hear that there is rubbish in the ocean that is the size of France. That is just so bad.
It's unbelievable. It's really hard to imagine the scale of the problem. But, you know, our oceans are huge and the amount of rubbish that we're creating is really big. So it's inevitable that they're all going to clump together and create these. They call it Trash Island, what's out there at the moment. And, yeah, we really need to work on making sure that we don't grow that any further so that we can protect our oceans and everything in them.
Now we move on to our next story, and you're going to tell us about the importance of protecting our vast underwater forests, sis.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the world's giant kelp forests. They're actually really vital marine wildernesses. They're as important to the Earth's ecology as rainforests and coral reefs. And they're currently being mapped out by scientists because we haven't taken a look at where they are exactly before. And University of Queensland is leading the project, and they're finding potential sanctuaries for giant kelp forests because they're being increasingly threatened by climate change. Those marine kelp forests, they're found off 25% of the planet's coastline. So they're really abundant on the planet, and they're one of the most productive and really quite magnificent ecosystems on Earth. They're beautiful, but they are disappearing because of an increase in human activities and heat waves in marine environments as well. So to work out all of this, the research team, they looked at 35 years of satellite data information, and they found areas where giant kelp forests act as potential climate refuges, and they're calculating how much protection is needed in those areas. So there's a whole lot of number crunching going on. And I think it's really important to know that giant kelp, it is the fastest growing organism on Earth. And when we lose a forest, we're losing an incredible carbon store. They hold a lot of carbon, and they're habitats for marine biodiversity. They're breeding grounds for fish, and they also work as a buffer for erosion on coastal communities, so you don't get that loss of the beach. But one of the biggest barriers to help the kelp forest conservation is a lack of awareness. You know, we don't know as much about them compared to other ecosystems like coral reefs. So we need the public, we need people like you and me and our listeners, and we need the policy makers, we need the politicians to know that these underwater forests exist, that they're being threatened, and that we need to protect them.
Now we go from talking about protecting our vast underwater forest to talking about a new robot named Wombot. What can you tell us about this, sis?
Well, when I saw the name of this, I had to take a second glance because I don't know if you know, sis, but I did a TV show for NITV a few years back, a kids show. It was called Rewired. Yeah. And my offsider in that show was a big robot called Wombot. So I thought, hold on a minute, what's Wombot up to these days? it's a different Wombot this time.
You wouldn't write about that, sis. That's hilarious. I love it.
Pretty funny. But yeah, this new Wombot it's a robot also called Wombot. It's being used to explore and study wombat burrows and how they've been created because, wombats live and sleep in burrows. They also occupy a different burrow every 4 to 10 days. They move around a lot. And we're having some really big issues with mites with wombats that cause mange. It's a pretty serious disease that's affecting them. And they're thought to be transmitted when wombats, go into each other's burrows. But it's not been clear whether the conditions inside those burrows are making it more likely to happen. So researchers from La Trobe University and the University of Tasmania, they made Wombot to study the conditions inside the wombat burrows.
Okay.
And it's really cool because the robot is remote operated, and environmental sensors in Wombot, they can measure the temperature and the humidity in a burrow. And there's a little gripper on the front as well that can be used to put down or pick up more sensors. Now, they had to make Wombot, because wombat burrows are really challenging to study. They're narrow and they're muddy. You know, they can be dozens of metres long. They've got steep sections and sharp turns. You know, I remember growing up, Mum would always say to me, don't you climb down that wombat burrow. You know, they'll tunnel right through you on your on their way out. You know, they're pretty dangerous places to go in as well. You don't want to encounter a wombat in their own burrow. But so wombat, what the wombat, it lets us enter and explore these burrows without destroying them, which is really important, or without using radar, which can be really expensive. It is possible, but it's expensive. So they're hoping also that wombat could be used to help reduce the spread of that mange by putting insecticide inside the burrows or making sure that the burrows are empty before we temporarily heat them up, stick a heater down there, which can kill the mites. So wombat's got a lot of work to do, I reckon.
Gotta love that. A new robot called Wombot. Who would have ever thought, Ray Johnston? It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program today for our regular science and technology segment. Ray Johnston, Wiradjuri woman and journalist, thank you so much again.
Anytime, sis. Thanks for having me.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.